Hey, you know how Black Friday sales are the best savings of the year? Well, what if we told you Wayfair's bringing Black Friday to July? That's right. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is Black Friday in July. And it's on its way. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, way more doorbuster deals on top products and 24-hour surprise flash deals. Oh, and did we mention free shipping on everything? Everything. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer and the best time to make your home even more you. But it only lasts 5 days, so don't miss out. Mark your calendars, then head to Wayfair for up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the summer. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale, July 24th through 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1325. This is your host, Danny Pena. And also join me in this week's episode, we have all the way from Switzerland, Pete Productions' own Pete. What's up, Pete?
What's up, everybody? How you doing? Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world.
Very dark over there. What time is it over there?
It's 4:30, bro. This is when the sun goes down.
Oh, wow. Damn. I thought it was like that.
Yeah.
Jeez. All right. Yeah. You prefer at this time to go, the sun to go down, or you prefer a little later?
It doesn't really matter. Like it depends. Like, obviously in the summer, the sun will be up much brighter, much longer. So like, it'll be on to like 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
But then during the winter time, like 4:30, it's done. Bye-bye, sun.
Yeah.
It starts to go away. And also, we live in a valley. Like, we have mountains on one side, we got a lake on the other. So, like, all of the fog and cloud cover comes in right above my city, like, where I live, the town. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you're above, like, if you're, like, in Menzingen or closer to, like, the Zuckerberg, you look out and you see the bright sun, and there's just, like, a layer of clouds right below you. It's really, mm-hmm. really weird when you're up there. But, I mean, that's part of the winter depression here in Switzerland. But it's cool. It's cool. I dig it.
All right. Dope. All right. No, yeah, sometimes the reason I ask, sometimes I feel like, all right, it's the end of the day already, and that type of thing.
But well, okay. I mean, by the time we get on, for me, it's almost the end of the day. You guys still, yeah. Sun just came out, so it's weird. Yeah.
All right. And also joining us is Paris. What's up, Paris?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, man. You seem very nice, because, you know, pre-show, you were like a little angry, but now you're
spicy.
You're a nice
spicy
person. He comes in. He's coming here all in peace, peaceful person now. Welcome back, Paris.
Thank you.
It's all good. It's all good. Everyone, thank you for listening and also watching here on Twitch. Shout out to all the viewers. Now, if you'd like to listen to our past episode, head over to gamertagradio.com. We have a lot of content over there. Make sure to stream. Also, find us on any podcast app. All you have to do is just search for Gamertag Radio. Follow us, subscribe, and also share the content to your friends. Now, if you'd like to be part of our family discussion, because we have a lot of questions coming up for this episode, here's how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so last week we had a great conversation. What's up with this guy? This is the bootleg version of Apple Vision Pro right here. He's trying to.
It's the Apple Vision Pro.
Hey, I'm doing pastor. I can see it. I'm being like Marquise Brownlee. He did a 2-hour podcast with the mm-hmm. Vision Pro on the entire time.
what it looks like in reality versus what the advertisements look like. And I saw that.
Now, Paris, before I mention the poll question of the week, you still curious on buying it, or you like still want to wait, or what? Because it's expensive, man. There's not a lot of features there that. Oh, Paris is going in.
Oh, he's
Paris
going all really in. Going. He just went all in.
Are you going to wear that throughout the whole show?
I'm going to wear it the entire time.
There you go. No, for real, you planning? You still planning to buy one or no?
I never said I was buying one.
Bro, you posted on Twitter. What are you talking about?
What did I say? What did I say? Since you love to see what I tweet and talk about.
We know he loves his partner. Look. We know he don't read. So that's
I know. He don't read.
First of all,
he just saw Apple Vision Pro and then he immediately go, oh, he's buying it. That's what you did. Read what I said.
Look, if Apple send you one, you're still going to take it.
Oh, if Apple send me one, I'll wear it every podcast.
Yo, he'll sleep with it. He'll drive.
They watch the Bucks on TV, everything.
Oh, my God. It's all good. All right, so question of the week.
Someone clip this and send it to me so I can see the picture. God. I want to see it. Come on. Just a picture, screenshot, please.
Screenshot. There you go. Paris looks ridiculous.
P-Production's in full effect.
Yeah, tweet it at me, please.
All right. Wow, Paris looks ridiculous. Anyways. Poll of the week from last week's episode. Which Nintendo Switch 2 screen do you prefer? And I put up three answers here. 7.7% LCD. OLED, 46.2%. And fine with either, 46.2%. So it looks like the majority, they don't care. As long as it's a brand new console from Nintendo, it's all good. You know, but I'm with the majority too, is fine with either. So, what about you guys? Let's go with Pete. Pete, you prefer OLED, LCD, or you don't care? Nintendo Switch 2, or how Paris calls it, Super Nintendo Switch.
Super Nintendo Switch 2 Pro. I don't think I'm gonna get one, so I don't think I'm in the market. So I really don't care. I have one. I don't think I use it enough to warrant purchasing a brand new one.
Okay. But what about you? Me. What about you, Paris? With the bootleg version of Apple Vision Pro.
Why is Pete on the podcast lying? It's too early in the morning to be lying like that, man. Tell the truth.
Lying about what?
Hold up.
About buying? Getting one?
I'm not going to get one. Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm not you like will. You. I don't go out and buy the new one, the latest one, just to have it. No, I'm not going to do it.
Yes, you will.
Okay.
You will.
What do you want to put on it?
Yeah, Paris is right.
Since you and Danny like to keep betting on things and on dinners and stuff like that, bring it.
By the way.
Let's see the wager. Bring the wager.
Whatever you want.
All right.
Dinner
in Scrimps in New York.
Once you see,
that's okay. He's looking into the future. He's looking into his deluded future with that.
Paris is asleep. That thing is not even on. He's just watching black screen. Look, Paris is just showing to the world if he gets an Apple Vision Pro, Apple, this is what he's gonna do on all recording podcasts.
I see the screenshot. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's all good. All right, so let's go with the first topic here,
Paris?
Man.
Did you ask Paris if he's going?
Yeah, I did.
Well, he already.
I did.
Unlike you, Pete, I don't even need to answer the question because clearly
we know you're going to buy it. We know you're going to go buy it.
I prefer OLED. But there's no way in hell I'm waiting for an OLED. I'm getting the LCD at launch so I can play that 3D Mario, just like you.
Okay, we'll see it. I'll take that dinner when I'm in LA next. I'll have that dinner.
I'm gonna tell you what's gonna happen. Out of spite, he's not gonna buy it right now. But he's in the back of his head. He's gonna be like, "Man, I really want it.
I really want that dinner."
Yeah, but I just want the dinner. I just want them scrimps and then all that liquor. just like I'm gonna get with Danny because he lost his bet. That is 100% happening. I'm taking pictures. You know what? I'm gonna just take a glass of wine and just spill it all on the table. This is on purpose.
Wow.
Like, give me another one.
Yo, they're gonna kick you out. They're gonna kick you out of the restaurant. Like, get out of here. It's all good. All right. So PlayStation State of Play just happened a couple days ago, man. And I know Paris was part of the kind of funny reaction and because I was over there too at the studio visiting and everything when that was happening. And it was interesting hearing everybody's thoughts about the presentation. But one game that stood out to me that even Paris mentioned too was the Metro game, Paris, the VR. The VR game?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The Metro VR game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one looks really dope, man. Really, really dope. I think
the Metro Awakening.
Awakening. There you go. Yeah, I mean, PlayStation should show more VR games. I think it's been kind of light the past year or so. But I think that's a pretty good game that this coming out later this year, man.
You know what's something about that, you know, being serious for a second. It's also mm-hmm. going to be on MetaQuest 3. And when I saw that, I'm like, I probably just play it on MetaQuest and not on Ooh. PlayStation VR for the simple fact this is completely wireless. I'm not attached to the thing. I can go play whatever, because like playing Half-Life Alyx on this or playing like Asgard's Wrath 2 or obviously other VR things, you just have way more freedom with a wireless setup. So that game alone is not going to be the incentive to get me to jump back into PlayStation VR 2, because I have other options that I think are better VR options than jumping on VR 2 right now. So, you know, just truth of the matter. But it was good to see, because they for sure need more. And obviously not everybody is going to have multiple VR headsets. So for people that only have PlayStation VR 2, that is going to be an incentive for them to go pick it up. But they still need more VR stuff. I'm forgetting the name of the other VR game they showed. That one also looked interesting Silent as Hill? Well. No, it wasn't Silent.
Really?
No, it wasn't.
It was right after the Metro game. It was right after the Metro game.
Yeah, it was like the RPG one. Again, visually, no, it's not the greatest. I get it, but yeah. I like what you could do in it that I would want to experience that. But the point of the matter is, and I think Ryan McCaffrey, of all people, actually tweeted this and I agreed, where are the first party VR titles for PlayStation? I mean, we had Call of the Mountain last year, but we need something else. We need something big attached to one of their legacy franchises, like, oh my god, I gotta go play this. Or obviously
Legendary Tales too. Legendary Tales was one of them. PSVR game.
Yep, that was it.
See, that I mean, this is the problem that I have with past products from PlayStation. I feel like they announce it, everybody's excited, they release it, and then it gets quiet for a very long time. But then what is the point of people getting excited to buy something if there's no new content coming in? You know, like, I don't know. It happened with the PS Vita and a couple other things in the past. Like, I would like to see more stuff, not just release and that's it and stay quiet. And I agree with you, Paris. I would love to see more first party games, you know. So and now the PlayStation Portal. Right, that's what it's called, the new one that came out, Paris, the handheld
mm-hmm.
one.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
that came out, and now there's a rumor that Sony might be working on a new handheld. I don't know how true is that, but we'll see. But yeah, I would like to see more.
Well, here's the thing about that: whether it's, let's just for pretend say it's true, you're not going to see that thing until PlayStation 6.
Agreed.
It'll be like 2028, 2029 at this point before you would actually see that handheld come to market. So anybody that sees it right now, I wouldn't hold my breath that you're going to get it anytime soon.
I mean, we're still waiting for the BioShock game for Vita. Remember that?
Oh my god! That's why I have that picture of Levine holding it up. And whenever Greg says something crazy to me about Vita, I always post that picture to him. I go, "Where is it?
Where is it? We're still waiting.
So, do you think we see a new PlayStation before we see a new handheld?
That's what I just said.
So we're definitely going to see a new console itself.
Yeah, I don't think you see that handheld until PlayStation 6 is out.
Wow.
Okay.
So So,
well, here's another game that.
Hold on, okay. further to our wager. Are you buying that too?
Probably. I probably would. Yeah. Why not?
He buys everything. He's gonna buy everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now here's another game that I felt like it was a. The game looks fantastic. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. I just feel like the trailer and the presentation wasn't that great because of the music choice. And it's Stellar Blade. And that's a first party game that's coming out on PlayStation, exclusive on PlayStation 5. The game reminds me a lot of like Bayonetta, Devil May Cry, that type of style. It looks fantastic, but man, the music got me like, why they added this as a music choice to show the game for the first time, you know, to the public like that. I don't know. I just didn't like it at all, that part. But I'm excited to try it out once it comes out. Did anybody got to check out that game and liked it? Stellar Blade?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I was on the reaction with Kind of Funny when I was in studio earlier in the week. And it was interesting because I saw the game, and it was because I had been playing Final Fantasy VII Remake on stream with Mike, like right before we did the reaction. So I had that fresh in my head. So seeing the actual gameplay for Stellar Blade, I'm like, okay, this reminds me of something like Final Fantasy. Yeah, I would love to play this. But to like Blessing and Tim's point, the trailer itself was not good. It's not a good trailer. It's not a great get someone that isn't into that genre excited about wanting to go play that game. And I believe it's coming out in April. Hopefully they're hearing that feedback and they come out with another trailer, show some more gameplay. Cause some of the boss battles look like a lot of fun to be able to do. Mm-hmm. So I think the game itself is going to be fine. I just don't think what they showed in State of Play was a great representation of what Stellar Blade is going to be. But you know, if you're into that genre, turn-based type RPG, Final Fantasy style, absolutely. I think it's worth checking out.
What about you, Pete?
And obviously the game's not my cup of tea. I did like the graphics. I think the graphics, like the surrounding areas were cool. I just wasn't a fan of the characters. I didn't feel compelled, further to what Paris was saying, I didn't feel compelled to like get invested in like the way they were portraying the characters in the game. Maybe it's because I'm not very familiar with that IP in general, but I mean, I don't see myself buying it. But that's not an indictment on the game in any way, shape, or form. It did look cool in some aspects of it, but there was other parts where I was just like, not for me.
All right, what about this game, Judas?
Game of the show. Sick. That was a game of the show.
Game of the show. I have to agree.
Here's the irony of Judas, though. If you go back, because this is coming from Ken Levine, obviously the System Shock created BioShock, did BioShock Infinite. He said that when they created, Ghost Story? Is that the name of the studio? I believe it is. That when he left Irrational Games and left 2K, the whole point of creating Ghost Story was he wanted to a smaller team and wanted to do something different than what he had been doing previously. Judas looks like BioShock 4. And I'm personally okay with that. Goddamn, give me more of that. But it's hilarious to see how he's basically still making the same thing again. Not the same thing, obviously. It's a different setting and all that. But the style of game has not changed from what obviously made him very successful with System Shock and BioShock. So, I mean, looks great to me. Can't wait to see more of it. I'm assuming this is probably 2025. I don't think that'll hit this year, but it'll be day one for me.
Yeah, they didn't put a date, but yeah, I absolutely got BioShock 4 vibes off it just from the whole settings. Like aside from the fact that it's coming from Ken Levine, this definitely is on the radar for me though, for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna get this game once it comes out. Now, are you guys, well, besides Pete, but Paris, do you see yourself getting the console version of this one, or are you gonna go straight to PC for this one? I'm going straight to PC because I want to play that ultra wide.
I'll most likely play this on PC. I mean, you know, that's always going to be my go-to for games like that. But I'll be interested to see what the console version looks like as well. So I'll probably play on both.
I have to say that what you have on is very distracting.
Good. I'm not taking it off. I'm not going to do it.
Okay. All right. Fire's going to be on the hold. All right. Now, Silent Hill. There's two Silent Hills. That came, one of them came out, which is Silent Hill, the Short Message. And I've been hearing mixed reviews about that, the demo. But I haven't tried it out yet. I'm probably going to play it later on today. And also Silent Hill 2. So it's like a remake. And I think that's the one that Bluebird has been working on now for a while. And that's coming out sometime later this year. Your thoughts about Silent Hill 2 or the other one too, the Short Message? You guys like that at all? Those two games?
I don't know if... Did we really need a remake? And this is just my take on every remake that comes out. Have we gotten to the point where we're running out of content or running out of creative ideas to put onto a title? Or are these publishers or devs scrambling for additional capital or money?
I think it's both. I think it's both.
Because it's...
And that's, I mean, every company is going to release something to... To make money, but I
understand that part, but I don't understand the whole why do we have to keep redoing. And yes, there have been outliers, right? Like Dead Space last year, right, was one of them, mm-hmm. for me. But do we need remakes constantly? And yes, I understand going back years ago, you and I had the whole debate going back and forth about do we need to have that archive or that like walk down memory lane of past games so that they're not forgotten about the newer generation and things like that. But I just don't see the whole reasoning to constantly have to keep bringing back remakes and remakes and remakes. They're, and maybe this is going out on a limb, unless they're passion projects by the actual people doing it. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't they be better served given the opportunity to go and create those games and those new experiences for players instead of putting investment into remakes? Why not just invest that money into maybe smaller to medium sized passion projects that would get people invested in games as opposed to going back into a game that many of us have already played? And yeah, I understand there's a subset of people that haven't, but bringing them back in, I'm kind of irked about that.
Pete, you know why? Yeah. You know why?
Oh, it's the almighty dollar. Almighty dollar.
It's
I know.
It is quicker and more efficient to quote unquote remake a game than it is to build one from the ground up. We're obviously seeing with these big AAA games, they're taking longer and longer. They have longer and longer development cycles, right? Huge investments in the making of $50, $100, $200, $300 million just to make these games. And if these games, well, I'm sure we'll talk about Suicide Squad, but if these games don't have immediate success, it could threaten the very existence of the studio that's making them, right? But if you take an existing game that you already know is a hit, that you already know as an audience, you quote unquote remake it for the new console, you put it back out. I mean, it's profit. It's a low investment to do the remake itself. And then you put it out, you're charging 60, 70 bucks for it. God forbid I say you don't charge 70 bucks for something, but it's profit. You're getting a return on investment. You're making revenue on that. Not to mention, and I know we're getting further and further away from it, so it's becoming less and less of an excuse, but the pandemic drastically slowed down game development, right? So a lot of these games that we thought should have already been out are still 18, 24 months away. We're, you know, 2023 obviously was a great catch-up year for a lot of that stuff, but look at what Xbox went through in 2022, and we're seeing PlayStation go through the same thing right now here in 2023 and even into 2024, you know, based on the state of play. You know, we're not seeing a lot of stuff coming from their internal studios. So it's where we are. So what do you do to fill the gaps? Oh, remake this, throw that a remake, you know, that. So that's what's happening. In my personal opinion, I could be freaking wrong. I don't work there, but that's the way I'm seeing it.
I mean, of course you're seeing things with, you know, with that on, you see the future. So, of course, you see everything there.
Do you know while you were talking, I was literally in the Xbox app and I'd pulled up a game while we were doing it. Cool.
First of all, we're talking about PlayStation. Why you got to throw in Xbox in there, man? Do you see how you start?
Because according to
Twitter. That's how you start, man.
Because according to Twitter, I didn't tweet or say anything about the state of play ahead of time because I'm on an Xbox show. That's what Twitter told me this week.
Yeah. See Paris on kind of funny. Every time it will go on and he finishes, he goes, Xbox. And he just walks away. Xbox. It's all good. Now, I mean, look, another game is also a remake. And when this came out during the PlayStation 4 era, yo, fantastic game. Until Dawn. But now it was also announced that it's coming out for PlayStation 5 and also PC. You're going to have all kinds of new stuff in there too, man. But that's another game, Paris, that is a remake. So how many remakes are we going to get to see from PlayStation throughout the year, man? Like, it's...
Well, we know
there's going to be more, man.
Well,
we
know we're going to get like 35 Resident Evil remakes from Capcom, so they still coming.
But, I don't know. It's a little bit... Well...
It's no different.
It is different.
It's no different. Spin that one. Please spin that one. I want to see that one.
I'm just talking junk to Britt because she said I was a coward because I wasn't on XCast when she was on there recently. But the point is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But the point, I mean, look, the Resident Evil remakes, I mean, being serious for a second, are how you should do, like Dead Space, the Resident Evil 4 remake. That's how you should do a remake where you're clearly upgrading the game and giving a damn near a new experience with this remake. Like, that's because, look, I have quietly been playing Resident Evil 4 on the remake and it's freaking great. Don't tell her I said that, but it's true. But I don't really have a reference of the first one because I didn't play it. But what I'm playing right now is fantastic. But the fact that that game even entered the game of the year conversation says a lot about that remake, right? I did play the Dead Space remake. It was amazing. It was great. I played Last of Us remake. It was basically just a visual bump. You know what I mean? Whereas you didn't change anything about the game. So I didn't need to play that to have that experience because I had already had it, you know, when the game originally came out. Same with, obviously, this Last of Us 2 one is a little different on PS5 because they added like a new mode, stuff like that. But you're going to continue to see more of these things because of like I said previously, it's a quicker return on investment doing that because the assets are already there. You do the visual upgrade, maybe add a new mode here or there. It's a lower cost and time investment, you know, from these studios to be able to do it versus let's make a brand new game. Let's go make Starfield. That's going to take a long ass time to do. And it better be a hit when it comes out because if it's not,
major fail.
We're seeing the results, you know, over the past few years with all these layoffs and studio closures.
Look, there was a lot of other games that was announced too, like Sonic and Shadow Generations. There's Dave the Diver. I think they added Godzilla in there. That's going to be interesting too. But the one that actually stood out to me out of the whole thing was the end, man. Death Stranding 2 on the beach. Long presentation, long trailer. I think it was like, what, 10 minutes or so from just that game alone. And I know Hideo Kojima also announced a new game that he's working on too, exclusively for PlayStation. Yeah, so, but I want to ask you guys this. I didn't play part one of Death Stranding. Didn't really care much for the game about it. I'm like, whatever, it's cool. It looks good. Is this something that's going to maybe want to buy part two to try out at all, or you're like okay about it?
No, I am. Look, I'm infamous for not being, you know, the biggest Kojima fan since Metal Gear Solid 2. I mean, half joking, half serious. Excuse me. Death Stranding, no, I have not played it. People that have played it have sung its praises and told me how great it is. I will admit though, watching that trailer, yo, the puppet alone, I'm like, what's up with the puppet? I need to know what's up with the puppet. It almost makes me want to go back and play the first Death Stranding so I understand that world and understand what's going on in it to play Death Stranding 2. That trailer was highly interesting to me, for sure. And let me just say this before we jump to Pete, because I said this during the watch and I tweeted it as well. Mm-hmm. Kojima? No, okay, nobody. And when I say nobody, I mean nobody in this gaming industry has been able to do what Kojima has currently been doing over the past few years. He is the only independent creator that has the full backing of PlayStation for a passion project, the full backing of Xbox for another passion project that is doing unique and innovative things that we have not seen in other games. And he has the attention of Hollywood. He's getting major stars and studios to back him on these passion projects. Nobody else is doing what he's doing. And I joked and I said, I would love to be in those pitch meetings. What the hell is he saying in these pitch meetings that they're like, here, yeah, Uncle Scrooge, they're backing up the money truck. Yeah. Do what you want. Because think about it.
Yeah.
He got extended time on with the Game Awards to talk about the new project with Xbox. He gets extended time during the State of Play to talk about what he's doing for that. You know, obviously, all these different Hollywood actors that are and directors and stuff that are like, I want to be a part of this. He has such brand awareness that goes beyond gaming at this point. It's incredible. And, you know, I may not have be the biggest fans of all his games, but I respect and understand the talent that's there and the vision that he's doing. Because, like, again, if he pulls off this, what is it called? OD? No. I'm talking about the Xbox one first, but because that one's like all in the cloud, horror, all that. If he pulls off that, he's opening up a brand new genre of gaming doing that.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, we just talked about Ken Levine. Kojima's doing the same exact thing. Oh, I'm not at the studio to do the IP that I'm famous for. Well, I'll just basically make Metal Gear Solid 6 and call it something else. Because that's what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And that has a whole unique Hollywood. I'm extremely excited to see what that's going to be. Which, again, that's probably a PlayStation 6 game. That you won't see that on PS5.
I can see that. Yeah. I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Or is it possible there could be both?
I mean, it could be. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say that it's not. But it's crazy to think how he has three major projects all working right now, you know, with Kojima Productions. He's doing Death Stranding 2. He's doing the Xbox, the OD, I think it's called, right? And then obviously he's making Metal Gear 6. All this is happening. He's in some form of production all at once. It's very impressive. Really is.
All he needs is Nintendo.
If he has an idea that he's like, oh, I would love to do this on the Super Nintendo Switch, I guarantee Nintendo will be like, come on, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. Pete, your thoughts before we go to the next topic.
Well, I'm actually surprised you guys haven't even talked about Rise of the Ronin, right? I think for me,
we didn't get to it yet, Pete. You ever thought of that?
Well, that's called a segue, Paris.
I'm not the host. That's Danny's fault. Don't say me, because I wanted to talk about it.
He Paris doesn't know what's going on. He has that thing on.
Oh, no, I can see very well. Thank you very much. I see you.
Anyways, you mentioned earlier about this being a passion project, and this being a game about a developer having worked on it for years. They've worked on this game for 9+ years. It's almost alongside the same length of time as a Starfield, right? So I think what they're doing with Rise of the Ronin is pretty interesting. At the end of the day, Team Ninja's has always done a phenomenal job with their titles, and I'm here for it. I want to see what it's all about at the end of the day, right? It's different. It's Find Your Beer. You're playing with a ninja, and it's popular because Asian culture is really hot right now. But I love the exploration of my culture, which I don't see all that often being well represented in gaming. Going to the Kojima thing, Paris, I think you're spot on. He could walk into any entertainment space right now, whether it be TV, movie, or what have you, and say, here's my pitch. And he's more than likely going to get the, well, let's at least have a separate discussion, and let's go talk money. Let's go into the negotiation table. That is not something that many people in this industry, in entertainment period, have the ability to do. That's pretty phenomenal, right? For him to have gone from Metal Gear Solid 2 to getting booted from from where he was and sitting in limbo for about 2-3 years. And now all of a sudden he is the industry darling with all of these different pet projects. Yeah, I can't think of another, I can't think of a developer or a publisher or a small, you know, one person, you know, development team that has built up this cachet of industry cred to be able to do exactly that, which is walk into any desired developer or publisher and say, hey, let's collab, let's go do this, let's do that, and get the forward push. So, you know, hats off to him. Yeah, he went through some hell to get to it, but I'm in.
Yeah, I can see him working on more and more projects with other companies too, man. So, but anything else about State of Play before I go to Suicide Squad? Anything else? No? Okay.
I guess that's it.
Suicide Squad. It is, then. Okay. So, shout out to WB Games for sending us a early code of Suicide Squad. And we all got to play it, PC version, right? And I haven't completed the game at all. I've been super busy with other stuff. But have any of y'all completed the game at all, or at least close to it? Yes or no?
I think I got 6.5 hours into the game. I don't know if that connotates enough. I think I'm close, right? I will say it was refreshing for me to play it, being a big comics fan and seeing some of, with the exception of Harley Quinn, some of the lesser representative characters being brought to controlled area, something that I could jump into. I love King Shark. I didn't have as much excitement to play as Boomerang, as Captain Boomerang, but I will say being able to use the Speed Force glove and throw the through the boomerang and teleport to the spot is a really dope angle on his character. Obviously, Deadshot, he's going to be Deadshot. He's just going to shoot things. My least favorite character moves-wise, and that's more so because I couldn't get the timing and the action down, was Harley Quinn, right? It was just too difficult for me to just do the jump, flip, throw the grappling hook. After a while, though, it did get mad repetitive and repetitious for me. I think overall, the video, the visuals, the audio were phenomenally done. But at the end of the day, I think some of like the constant quips and background noise from the characters almost overpowers it, especially when it starts all like, they all start going at the same time, and it's kind of like, it's too much. It's almost like noise at that point, right? It starts to really take away from the game itself. But I don't think that this is truly representative of a Rocksteady game, considering how many other games we've played from them. The entire Arkham series is a masterclass, in my opinion, and I almost think that this was a step back for them. You know, I didn't, and maybe that's just because I've got 3 or 4 games in of practicing and knowing those moves. Whereas with this one, it was the going back and forth was almost, you didn't get a chance to truly focus and on mastering a character's ability. You're kind of scattered between 4 different corners of your characters and trying to figure out which one is best for which. And hopefully maybe it's just I need more time with the game. I think 6.5, almost 7 hours is well representative of it. But maybe I just need more time to practice and get into it. Wouldn't say it's a horrible game. Wouldn't say it's, you know, along the lines of like a Redfall or whatever with massive disappointment. But I would say that the excitement on it almost didn't match the delivery.
Yeah, this game reminds me a lot of Crackdown, stuff like that. Now, the question I was going to ask you, Pete, is it because this is a live service game or just the style of the play of the game?
That didn't bother me.
A little bit
It didn't bother me. I didn't really care about I get the vitriol that they're getting for it. I get the reasoning behind it, but it wasn't indicative of, or it wasn't an indictment from me, right? I don't think that took away from what I experienced in the game. I just felt, I guess maybe it was more expectation versus what I got back, right? Being a comics fan, seeing all the other people, I don't want to do spoilers, but you know, like seeing other appearances from other characters throughout the DC universe was great for me. Again, as a comic book fan, and I have no problem admitting that I enjoyed that. It's just some of the other things that just, maybe I just have too much expectation coming out of the Arkham series and heaped it on that. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a bad call on my part. Maybe I shouldn't have expected, you know, that considering it's four different characters versus always playing with Batman. It didn't hit like I was hoping it was.
Mm. How about you, Paris? You feel the same too?
So Pete, you talk about time. You don't know if you had enough time in the game. You've had more than enough time because this is the game. It's not going to change. Your point about it being very repetitive is true. And it's interesting because obviously we've seen a lot of discourse and back and forth why they weren't because we talked about it last week, why they weren't review codes early and, you know, the reasonings potentially why in the media, all this stuff. Playing the game now, I'm having fun with this world. Visually, it's visually very impressive. The voice acting is top notch. Samoa Joe 1000% needs to do more voice acting in gaming because he's great. But the entire voice cast is great. There's a lot of funny moments in there. The story for what they're attempting to do is compelling enough. But the problem with Suicide Squad is this is supposed to be a live service game. This is supposed to be something that's trying to monetize you with Battle Passes where you get into the end game and then you're supposed to want to go back and continue to do this and level up the characters and do all these things. There's just simply not enough here because of the repetition of how they're doing it. Like you mentioned, this isn't a Rocksteady game. It's not. They'd have been better off making a Suicide Squad game that was a 15 to 20 hour single player experience where all four members of the Suicide Squad had unique abilities. They do not. The traversal is unique, but the actual gameplay, the gunplay, is the same across the board for all intents and purposes. And that's the problem. Go to rooftop, clear enemies, rinse and repeat. Go to rooftop, clear enemies, rinse and repeat. Boss battle, okay, you do a couple things, rinse and repeat. That's the game. And it's a damn shame that that's the game. With the pedigree of this studio and what they've been able to do with the Arkham series, this is not what people are going to expect going in. Unfortunately, again, it's not terrible, but it's not a masterpiece either. It's just okay. And that's the problem with this, because I have no incentive once I roll the credits, because I have not finished it either, but I'm close. I have no incentive once I roll the credits to jump into that end game and be playing this 3, 6, 9 months, a year from now. Why? It's not doing anything unique enough that I'm going to monopolize my time in this game. I'm not going to invest my money into this game, to continue to play it and unlock costumes and all the weapons and all these things. Why? It's too samey. In that sense. And again, that's just a damn shame that it is. This could have been more. I know when we initially saw it, everybody was super excited about it. I was. There was a lot of worry last year. They delayed it because I'm like, ooh, this isn't looking too good. I think they did their best to try and, like, this isn't a Redfall experience. That's the best way I can put it. Redfall was just fundamentally a broken game. This isn't a broken game. It's just a very repetitive game. It's very, the word I'm looking for, it's very simple with a lot of the mechanics in here. Again, Harley Quinn should have a unique weapon set compared to King Shark, compared to Deadshot, obviously, yep. Compared to Captain Boomerang. Captain Boomerang, as an example, should be doing some outlandish, weird, crazy stuff with his boomerang. He doesn't do that. Shooting guns. Come on. I mean, the only thing that he's doing unique, again, is a traversal.
Yeah.
But that's not why people are going to want to play this. And it's funny you bring up Harley Quinn. That's actually who I main. I think I got her traversal pretty down. Once you get it down, it's pretty fun to do.
Oh, no. All of them are really fun once you master one, but you can't pick one and play that character throughout the entire thing.
Right. But other than that, there's nothing unique that's happening. Excuse me. Like, there's cool stuff. Like when Batman is trying to, you know, the whole Batman stuff. Again, I don't want to spoil anything for people to play it. But when Batman is hunting you down, like, that atmosphere is super cool. Mm-hmm. But all you're really doing is just walking around. You're not doing anything. You know what I mean? So that's the problem with Suicide Squad, unfortunately. And this kind of leads me back to what we were talking about before with, you know, studios and return on investment and all that. I am truly, genuinely worried for Rocksteady. I am. Because I do not think this game is going to be a big financial success for them. Rocksteady might go away. I mean, think about it. The creators have already dipped. A lot of people clearly saw the writing on the wall and left the studio last year. I don't know what that means for the studio moving forward. Will Rocksteady get to go back and truly make a Superman game or make another Batman game? I don't know. There may not be a Rocksteady in 2 years. And that worries me about this industry and where we're headed with these type of games. Live service games have the bubbles burst. That's just the truth. If this game would have came out 10 years ago, we'd be losing our minds. But we've had so many live service games. We know the formula and how it works. This ain't it in 2024. It's just not. Fortnite is a unicorn. And we need and these studios needed to wrap their heads around that. That's why The Last of Us Factions got canceled. I'm extremely curious to see what Concord's going to be. Let's see how Bungie handles Marathon. Obviously, another Bungie game. Destiny. We're at 10 years, and it feels like we're at 10 years with that game. We've rinsed and repeated that formula enough that it's time to move on. The Division, you know, we're super excited about it. Then it goes away. Oh, we're moving on. Wait, we're going to come back. Now we're going to do Heartland. Like, I don't know, man. And Suicide Squad is not on the level of any of those games that I just mentioned, which is the problem. You're not even at that level to get me to invest into wanting to play your game in 2024. So I'll finish the story. I'll have a good time with it. Like I said, I am having fun, but there is no incentive past this 8-9 hour experience that I'm having to keep going. Just isn't. I'd rather go play something else.
For them I think it was a bad move. Absolutely. I mean, to think that there's enough content to make or to incur or entice someone to play 200-400 hours is wild, right? Like, look, if they're successful and they can find a player base that is willing to do that, great. But I don't see how they can do that if it's a shooter. Like, how much shooting can you do on this through story time? If I agree with you, they should have focused more on ability as opposed to making a shooter. If they would have made this a traversal action game where it wasn't shooting, I think we're looking at a different game altogether. But because they made it focused on shooters, and this comes from the shooter lover, right? That's all I really play at the end of the day. Adding that, like, almost forcing that into the characters, it's fine for Deadshot because that's his thing, right? But to force that on King Shark, you know, Captain Boomerang and Harley Quinn, it just doesn't make sense.
You know what this reminds me of? Reminds me of, this is like back in the early 2000s where every game had a multiplayer feature in there. Remember when BioShock 2 came out? We were like, why? The game doesn't need no multiplayer. And a lot of people didn't even get to play the game, which the game is fantastic. But, you know, I feel like every company now is trying to do the whole life service thing, man. And it's like, is it going to be good, man? And like you said, Paris, Fortnite is a unicorn. Not that many games that's going to reach to that level. And also Destiny, I'm surprised it's still going on, you know, still going strong with, you know, with new content, all that stuff, man. But with this, like, I feel this. You know which game I probably will compare this to? I'll probably compare this to like Avengers. I played it and I was done. I never went back. Didn't care about the extra content, the, you know, all that stuff that came out in the future. I think they added a Spider-Man. Didn't care for it. Never went back.
But Avengers. Exactly. Put Avengers next to this. Which one would you have played more? Now that you've played both, which one did you enjoy more? I would say I enjoyed this one more than Avengers.
Oh, this one. Oh, hands down, this one. Yeah, this one, hands down.
Really?
Sure. Like, I will play this. Yeah.
I know. Well, the point that I was making about Avengers is the difference is Avengers, Iron Man did Iron Man stuff. Thor did Thor stuff. Mm-hmm. Captain America did Captain America stuff. They weren't all samey.
Yeah.
That was one thing Avengers actually did. It wasn't a shooter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, Paris. I'm having a better time with this game, even though it's very repetitive, than Avengers. Avengers was repetitive too. I mean, the story was very cool, but I feel like this one is a little bit better for me. In my opinion. But we'll see. Anything else about Suicide Squad? No?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Now, guys, I'm going to play this interview that I sat down with the executive of Halo TV series. We talked about season 2 that's coming up in a couple of days. Kiki Wolfkill. I'm going to play here on the podcast, and we'll be right back after this.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, we're back here at Gamertag Radio, and we have a special guest, and we have the executive producer of the Halo TV series, and we're going to talk about season 2. We have Kiki Wolfko. Kiki, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's very exciting to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think last time I saw you was when season 1 came out. You were actually doing your media tour, talking about the series and everything at that time. How's it been?
It feels like that was 10 years ago. It's been good. It's been a like great. So I think it's been what, like 2 years?
Yeah,
And we went great straight into season 2. And now we are so close to releasing, but still finishing out season 2. So it feels like I haven't slept since I saw you last.
So
which may be obvious.
So quick question about that. I remember I went to the premiere actually for season 1, and it was a lot of fun seeing, you know, the team there and everything. And I remember you on stage, you got very emotional. Very, very emotional. And because this is the first time that people are actually gonna get to see the series. And I know you guys have been working this very hard for a while too. Plus you were away from the stage, right? While working this.
Yeah, it was, I think, you know, part of it was, and you know, it was such a long journey to get season 1 done. Like, we were in development or, you know, all sorts of stages before we actually started working on season 1. Mm-hmm. And so to finally have it see the light of day was incredibly emotional. Then that immediately turned around to, all right, what do we need? What do we need to do for season 2? And what do we want to do for season 2? Right.
Yeah, and I know the internet and the fans could be very, very picky about a lot of things. People had a lot of opinions about the series, the season 1.
Yeah.
And I know you guys, the team learned a lot from working on that. And you guys learned from that, from like the feedback from the fans or what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always so interesting because I would say it's the same often with games as well, which is, you know, you finish a game, or you finish a season 1, and you have pages in your notebook of stuff that you already want to do differently, or that didn't turn out exactly as you wanted, or, you know, you learned along the way. And so, you know, jumping into a season 2, you're automatically tackling that list from the get-go. And then you layer on top of that, obviously seeing audience feedback, seeing what they responded to, what they didn't. And it's a really interesting process, right? Of how do you look at all the feedback, and how do you take the things that are constructive and take the things that really are like a strong signal, and then how do you also filter through the noise, and how do you also sort of emotionally and mentally filter through the noise, especially when you're coming off long projects and It's definitely a really it's a hard process, but it's valuable, right? I mean, that's the benefit of having the tools that we have now, where we can hear audience feedback, we can hear what they have to say, we can see the thoughtful debate, we can see the unthoughtful debate, and all of that is really, really helpful.
Yeah, I think Rob, your camera went out. Yeah, it moved. It moved the camera. Say like that. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah.
Noticed that it was, I thought that I was interfering, so I turned it off on purpose, but I'll leave it up and just mute again. Sorry.
It's all good.
That part.
Yeah, I can edit that part. It's all good. Kiki, and how's it like, I know it's kind of difficult to work on something like this on a project with a title that's so well known to please the fans, but also you want to get the new audience too. How's it been like to have that balance to entertain both audiences?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's a really tough balance. And I think one of the hardest parts about season one was, you know, a lot of the fans didn't like a lot of the choices. Many of the fans did, many did not. And that's tough. I mean, we deal with the same thing on the game side, which is, there's people connect with different parts of the universe, right? People connect to different types of gameplay. There's things, every Halo means different things for a lot of people. And so, you know, it's always been a seemingly impossible task to please all of the fans. That said, you know, you are doing it because of the fans. You are creating the show because you care about the fans and you want to honor their loyalty to the franchise. And yes, at the same time, you also want to bring new people in. You know, I think for me, the idea of being able to share the Halo universe with new people and have new people fall in love with it is part of what I get so passionate about. But it is a really tough balance, especially when you're going into a different medium. And some of that new audience may be, you know, more attuned towards film and television than they are to games. And so, you know, there's nuances in what they're looking for. But at the end of the day, right, it really comes down to trying to deliver a great story in an amazing universe. And, you know, it admittedly on season one, you know, we didn't hit all of the marks we wanted to with story, but learned an incredible amount. And without season one, there wouldn't be what I feel is the really, really strong story and execution of season two, right? So that, you know, it had to be a continuum. And so really it's about how do we deliver on an amazing Halo universe? How do we deliver on these really interesting character stories and deliver that story and hope that in bringing that Halo world to life and pairing it with stronger story that, you know, we can bring some of those fans back that we may have lost in season one while continuing to delight the fans we did have in season one.
Yeah. I checked out the trailer for season two. It looks really dark. Is this going to be very dark compared to the first season?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say it's darker, but that's also because the story is darker, right? When we get to the war escalating against the Covenant and Earth and humanity feeling more threatened than ever, that is a darker story. And Halo has always told sort of this range of stories. You know, if you think back to like the Halo 3 ODST ad, right? It was very dark and gritty and grounded and very much about sort of the nature of war and the nature of every man is a hero, every person is a hero. But then you have things elsewhere in the universe that are much more sort of wonder and sci-fi oriented. So it's really about bringing those two together. But no question, really we're shooting for a more grounded feel, a grittier feel, right? Like something where as this war is escalating, you want to feel, right, that sense of doom so that you can also feel that sense of hope.
Are we going to see any new characters or any similar characters from from previous from the series, from the game?
We've got some new. We've got some new characters. We have, you know, just a couple of characters that are completely new to Halo. So we have Corporal Perez, who's played by Christina Rodlow, who's amazing. She is new to Halo All Up. But then also we have the character of James Ackerson, who a lot of canon fans will recognize as being a very intriguing figure in the UNSC and sort of a very intriguing foil to the Spartan 2 program and to Halsey, played by Joseph Morgan. And so his character has added a lot of intrigue. And, you know, you may see a few new characters on the both the Spartan and the Covenant side.
Yeah,
what I've seen a little bit.
What about Arbiter? Like, is he going to be there? Like, is it going to be similar to the game, or is it going to be totally different? Because I know the universe is completely different from the game and the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, we do have the Halo Silver timeline, and you know, as you know, the Arbiter is sort of a title bestowed on a Covenant warrior, right? And really that role is about both redemption and sacrifice. So, you know, there may be an Arbiter. There isn't just the Arbiter, although we have an Arbiter on the games that we know very well. So I think you can expect sort of a similar vein.
Yeah, you know, I was actually, you know, doing my research, see what's out there so far about season two, and I read somewhere where I think it was you that actually talked about there's going to be an episode that's going to be, it was filmed for like a single shot. It kind of reminded me of, was it from one of the Marvel movies, Marvel TV series on Netflix? Can I know they've done that soon? Yeah. So it's going to be something like that, similar like that, with just one shot throughout the whole episode, or what?
So it's not the whole episode. What we do have is we do have an episode with, they're called Oneers.
Okay.
With actually a series of Oneers through the episode. And really the choice to do that wasn't like, oh, we want to try and pull off a Oneer. It was, we want the viewer to really feel like they're in the action, right? And feel that progression of action and sort of feel the chase, if you will. And so the decision to have these Oneers was really about firmly placing the audience in this moment where, you know, it feels like you don't understand the beginning and the end until you get there. We have a few of those. They are incredible to design and work on. Mm-hmm. You know, like any creative/technical challenge, they are really daunting and really frustrating when you're on set, but also really fun. And when you pull it off, super gratifying. So hopefully it helps in this episode to really sort of build the tension and build sort of the visceral sensation.
Was that one of the most difficult parts of working on this series, is just like do new things like that?
I will say it was one of many really difficult things to do on the series. I mean, we could have chose to try and shoot the Oneer in Iceland if we wanted to really make it harder in the middle of all the storms that we were sitting in. Mm. Thankfully, those were separated. But, you know, I think one of the fun things about creating a season like this is exactly how hard it is, right? You know, you battle alongside this amazing crew and you overcome all sorts of challenges and, you know, things change along the way and you come out the other side, having sort of forged yourself together, and what makes shooting something like this really exciting. And hopefully it shows on screen, right? Because this is about huge scale and epic war, right? So you want some of that. You don't want it to look like it was a walk in the park. Mm-hmm. And it certainly was not.
You know, one of the things I liked about season one is the action scenes, where episode one was very, very strong. And also the last episode too. I feel like in the middle, it was like a lot of the story. There was not that much action. Is there going to be a difference with season two now? Is it going to be more action or similar to like the previous season or what?
I think we tried to, we tried to space it out a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And I think, part of what we're trying to do is bring both, right? We are trying to bring action and character story and, sort of seeing these new places and these sort of epic worlds. And so definitely a lot of action. And I think action that will feel really different. Maybe you see that you're getting a sense of that from the trailer, but kind of back to that, that pillar of wanting to feel really visceral and grounded and in the head of, or the body of the person that we're, our POV is from. We've gone for a lot more, I don't want to say brutal, but much more physicality. It feels close. The action feels more intimate. The camera's right in there, right? So it really feels, maybe it does feel a little more brutal, versus being zoomed way out, right? And just seeing the things playing out on a tableau in front of us. And so I think that'll feel different as well. And I think what that does is when the action feels more personal, in some ways it plays into the story, right? In a more connected way.
And how long is from season one to season two? Is it right away straight to the story, or this like months or years later? And also, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was also going to say like the relationship between Master Chief and Cortana in this season compared to the previous one.
Yeah, there's, 6 months or so, enough time to, sort of set things off for season two in the place that we wanted to. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things have actually changed. I would say like the state of the UNSC and Oni is very different. Halsey left at the end of season one, and that kind of puts the whole Spartan 2 program on their back foot, especially with the arrival of Ackerson. The stakes are getting more dire as the Covenant are getting closer. So a lot of those big pieces have changed. And Astro Chief and Cortana are not as one. Mm-hmm. It was actually important to be able to separate them so that, we could sort of weave their stories together the right way for season two.
Yeah. And for those that, are still curious about watching season two, because they were probably disappointed with the first one, why they should check this one out and give it a chance?
Yeah, I mean, it's always tough to hear about people being disappointed with season one, right? Certainly understand where some of the detractors were coming from. I think, we learned a lot with season one, and making TV, and this will sound remedial, is super hard, right? And so again, to that point of you finish season one, there's already things you wish you could go back and do, but you just can't. That's not how it works. And so I'm hoping that some of the decisions coming out of season one for season two, and some of the changes that were consciously made to really bring some of the areas up from season one will help bring some people back. But also, it's a great story, right? And the execution of it is great, which isn't to take away from season one. But again, making this scale of sci-fi, VFX heavy, IP-driven show, lots of lessons learned on season one, and we took those lessons really seriously, right? And we're very committed to trying to do as much as we could with season two.
Yeah, when compared to the first season filming, was it longer filming season one when you guys went away from the States? I think it was in Europe, right? And what about season two? Compare was it months?
It was different because remember we went through the pandemic during season one. So mm-hmm. we had a hiatus. We had a couple hiatuses mm-hmm. because of weather and holiday. And so, you know, season one took much longer to shoot in terms of just calendar time, start to finish. And part of what made season two so intense actually was we just went start to finish. You know, it was 9 months of actual shooting straight through with, you know, another 3 months of prep before in Budapest in Hungary before we started shooting. So season two, thankfully, had learned a lot of lessons. On the other hand, it was a much shorter, more intense schedule because once we got into it, there was no breaks, there was no stopping. We took 2 weeks off for the holidays, which included traveling back and forth. So it was a very intense 9 month shooting period. And we were in Iceland, we were in Hungary, we were in Slovenia and Italy. And
yeah. And the hardest part is being away from the family too. It's like that's tough. That's really tough. Yeah.
Brutal. Lots of FaceTime. Leaving the dogs here, frankly, the hardest, at least, you know, I can talk to my husband on FaceTime. Dogs will have no part of it.
And what was, last question, what was like your favorite part working on this project overall for you?
I mean, I think it really felt like across season one and season two, right? Even with season one and all of the challenges, you know, it felt like with the amount of VFX, with the amount of action, with the scale of sets that we built, it was like for each season, we were making 4 feature films. And we did that twice and did it with an extraordinary crew and an extraordinary cast. You know, your family after kind of going through these two tours together. So proud, particularly with season two, so proud of the world that we've brought to life and really proud of, you know, the learning and what we were able to take from season one and bring to season two. But it was a big, big project. And to be where we are now, which is, you know, we've delivered most of the episodes, to be this close, feels great.
Well, Kiki, thank you for taking your time from your busy schedule. And I can't wait to watch season two. Can't wait.
Thank you. I can't wait to be done.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Kiki. Right.
Thank you.
No problem.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right. Thanks to Xbox, Paramount, and also Kiki for the interview. That was a lot of fun. Let me know, you guys, your opinion about the interview. I posted a short clip on Twitter, and people were mad still about season one, which I get. I get it. We talked about all that stuff, you know.
We talked about it here.
People were disappointed. We talked about it here, too. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens when season two comes out. I'm very curious. I think the series started very strong. It ended strong. In the middle was just kind of like, season one. But we'll see what happens season
moment
two.
Moment he took off his helmet, I lost it. I was done. They lost me as a viewer the moment they took his helmet off. They never should have done that.
It was very fast.
Super controversial. Just never should have done it.
Okay. We're not going to do fan mail because the episode is going to be way too long. So I'm probably going to save all the questions for next week. But anything else before we wrap it up, you guys?
No.
In Paris, I don't know if you still see the future over there.
I still do see
the future?
I do.
Yeah? What's the future? What's the future like? Looking like third party? Xbox going third party or Xbox just releasing games?
Ask me in the after show. Ask me in the after show.
After show. All right, guys. Thank you for listening to episode 1325. We're going to wrap it up here. Until next time. We're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.